Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
And there you go. That was a nice conversation. And I was telling the ambassador to stick around for our next one because the Irish, of course, we claim were so good at dealing with death. And she knows all about it from her marriage and family connections. But Willa White joins us this morning. He's got an upcoming comedy show and it's inspired by the loss of family members. He remembers in a very humorous way all of his family members with funny stories. And he had his own brush with death and often believes he really should have been the one to die in his family. So this chat, by the way, is about death. Use your discretion, but it is going to be funny as well. Willa White, you're very welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
You were meeting the British ambassador yourself outside when you were in?
I was, yeah. Club 54. She's 54, I'm 54. So, I met her outside. Really nice interview, I have to say, as well.
Warming up. We're all warming up now, aren't we?
Yeah,
what's
we
wrong
are.
With us?
We are indeed, yeah, yeah. Even though the weather's cooling down, we're starting to warm up.
Come here, it's coming to the Gaiety Theatre. Lovely place to be, to grace.
What a beautiful place. I was very fortunate to be the first comedian to play the Gaiety last year since Billy Connolly.
Really?
13 years previously, yeah. So, come here. For a guy that's come from where I've come from in life, to grace the stage of the Gaiety and walk through the corridors and look at the pictures of all the people who've played there and kind of to be going, Jesus, will you? You know, kind of feeling like a little bit inferior, like imposter syndrome.
Oh, don't be that.
But at the same time, was kind of really grateful because, I mean, in my life for years and years, people avoided me. So it's kind of very hard to comprehend that people are actually coming to see me.
Dead Man Talking is the name of the comedy show. And it is comedy, but it's about sad times, isn't it?
It is. It's about loss and it's about grief. But it's not a tribute to RIP.ie or anything like that, because the Irish, as you know, we do death very well.
Yeah.
We do it really well. And it was said to me by a friend of mine who's actually an undertaker, Edwina Fitzgerald. She said to me, we're celebrated when we come into the world, so why shouldn't we be celebrated when we leave it?
Yeah.
You know, the two big days in your life. The second one, you don't really get to celebrate yourself or the first. But
Remind people where exactly you grew up in Dublin.
So I grew up in a beautiful little village called Ballymun.
Yeah. Who was in the flat
was my mother, Rita White. She came from Crumlin. My father, Georgie White, he came from the tenements there right beside the Brazen Head pub called Audience House. And there was my older sister, Susan. She was 6 years older than me, who kind of doubled as my brother and my mother and my father.
And as you said at the start, you're only 54 years of age and all of those people are gone.
Yeah, they're all gone, yeah. I'm in recovery. I came into recovery. I had drug and alcohol issues from a very young age.
Yeah.
And my sister, I kind of saw solace in her. She was like the lighthouse in the harbour that I pulled into when the seas of life got really, really tough. So she was always there for me all the time. And she became my mother and my father because my dad was dealing with his own demons. There was violence in the home and there was alcoholism. So I kind of, you know, stayed with her most of the time and in her shadows. So she kind of doubled as my mother and my father. And she would have been like my big brother as well. So if I got into any trouble where I lived in the flats in Ballymun, I'd say to people, I'm going to go and get my sister. And they would usually say, oh, please don't, because she had a bit of a reputation, you know, which was great, like, you know. So she was there. So she, my sister Susan, as I said, was 6 years older. We were always really, really very close. She always had me back. I remember being on that queue for a living one time with Ting O'Gorman, what was his name? He was a presenter for RTE.
Paddy O'Gorman,
yeah. He used to do this programme called Queuing for a Living. And he spoke to me sister one time when I was in London on the run from a charge that I had over here.
Yeah.
And they were talking about me. I never seen the programme. A couple of friends of mine told me about it. And she was talking about me saying that, oh, you know, I was a heroin addict and I was suffering, you know, with addiction and this, that and the other. And he says, well, why don't you just, you know, just tell him to basically F off or whatever, you know. And she says, I can't do that. She says, I love him. I love him too much. So she never gave up on me. So she was the first to go. She was diagnosed with cervical cancer in 2009 when I was 8 years in recovery. And it was very, very difficult to deal with. And very, very hard to handle. And I remember I've been in the hospice down in St. Francis where recently I just done a bit of work for, I do a bit of charity work for them and I've worked there giving out the teas and the coffees for a while as well.
Really?
Yeah, well, I always said I'd go back and do something for them because I have to say, them type of places, I mean, hospices on the whole.
Yeah.
You know, they need a lot of charity. They need a lot of money pumped into them. I mean,
we need more of them.
Of course. And I mean, Brendan Gleeson has been an advocate for St. Francis Hospice alone.
That's right.
And done a lot of stuff. So I just felt for me that I took enough from life. So I find that there's a lot more in giving than there is in receiving. So I've done a little bit of work for them. There's actually a charity ball that I do, a black tie ball down in the Clontarf Castle Hotel on the 7th of November, which I host and have a night on for the hospice, and all the money that's made on the night goes back into the hospice. So it's a really good place. Okay. So she...
Did she end up there?
She did, yeah. My sister went into the hospice. It was actually only her anniversary last Friday. She was 15 years dead.
Wow.
So, and I found for me, I got a real moment of clarity when my sister was passing away. And the clarity for me was that we were only losing one person, myself, my father and my mother. But my sister was losing everybody. So I kind of got the understanding that it's a lot harder for the person that's passing than it is for the people that are waiting on the person to pass.
Right.
So she was losing her two sons. She was losing her brother,
yeah,
her mother, her father, her friends and everybody
dying.
And close to her, yeah.
Did she go off to Spain or somewhere on her own?
She did. She went off and spent a week with herself. I asked, did she want me to go? And she says, no. She says, I want to go on my own. She says, and spend a little bit of time with myself. And my sister Susan was one of them people who was a giver, who gave to everybody else and looked after everybody else.
She's
herself.
In her 40s. Like she's
she was 44, yeah. When
and she went off on her own to reckon with the fact that she was dying.
Yeah. I think she kind of went away just to spend a little bit of time with herself.
And, did she talk about it when she came back?
No, she did. We just kind of, I rang her when she was over there, and she was saying there was nothing really kind of morbid about it, or there was no sadness in it. I think she kind of, what we all tend to do in life sometimes is we tend to not make an appointment to meet ourselves. We're so busy with other people. And I think she just took a little bit of time out and went, you know what, I'm going to spend a little bit of time with myself, because she had given to so many other people in her life that maybe she just got a moment where she says, you know what, I'm going to take a little bit of time out for me. And it was nice for her to go away for the week. And we were there with her all the time. She went, my mum lived in London at the time. My mum come home to, you know, take a bit of time out and look after the kids and that. But when she passed on the 17th of October 2010 at 4:15 in the afternoon in St. Francis Hospice, we were all there with her. And, mm-hmm. and come here, she was a very, very special person. And I miss her terrible. I actually have a portrait of her on the back of my leg.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I have a funny tattoo. So she had a quote on her Facebook page. I'm going to show you now.
Yeah.
My sister.
I see it
and my sister
there,
was a character. She was really, really funny. And that's what I'm trying to tell people as well. The show isn't snots and tears.
Okay.
The show is it's a funny, funny show. So my
this
sister,
is her quote
my
on
sister,
your bicep.
Yeah, so
under the bicep.
And there's her signature.
Yeah.
Now, she didn't sign it, obviously.
Yes.
That would have been a completely different show. But she had this quote on her Facebook page, and it says, the problem with life is not that it ends too soon, it's that we wait too long to begin it. Right. So she, it
nice.
Wasn't her quote, it was just a random quote that
yeah,
she got
quote
somewhere.
She liked. Yep.
But she had it on the page, and I thought it was lovely. So I went in to get this quote done, and the guy that done it was a dyslexic tattoo artist.
Oh, God.
So
that's a lot of words.
He said, look, I'm letting you know I'm dyslexic. I said, look, I just write it down. If it's wrong, we'll rectify it and okay. we'll get it done. So he went off and he wrote the quote down. He came back, and I said, yeah, it's grand. Put it on.
The spell check on
he
this.
He said, look, read it twice. So I read it twice and I put it on my arm, and that night I took off the cling film.
Yeah.
Because it was making me lunch for work. And if you look at it, it says the problem with life is not that it ends too soon. It's that we wait too long to begin it. And I looked at it and the first question I asked myself was, am I dyslexic?
Yeah, okay.
But what I done was the following week I went in and I got the two O's. Put on my ankle and just said that they fell off the tattoo.
You
and
got the two O's
yeah,
on your ankle.
Yeah. So I'm sure she would have got a great laugh
that
out of that as
great.
Well, you know.
That is spectacular. The Cork lad who got the tattoo, All Ireland Champions 2025. There was no O's in the world that could fit the frame. as you say, family members, it's not funny losing them, but there are funny things happen at funerals and funny things happen when you talk about the people.
Yeah.
Tell us what you said about your father.
So my father,
funeral.
I've done the eulogies. I think James Joyce wrote Ulysses. I could probably write a book called Eulogies.
And okay, you've done so many of them.
So I've done them all. I've done my sisters, I've done my mothers, and I've done my father's. And my father's was getting I done my father's eulogy, and I stood in the church in Francis Street, is where he lived before he passed away. And I stood up and I said, I think my father will be a little bit upset today, because my father is used to getting carried out of places rather than into places, i.e. pubs. And he was a great character as well, my dad came from a family of 16 children,
wow,
16 kids. There's three of them left.
Poor woman.
Yeah, well, she was 16. Pregnant for 16 years on the truck.
That's unbelievable.
So there's 16 years between the youngest and the eldest. Yeah, my granny Elizabeth, an amazing woman. So my dad was a character, dealt with a lot of trauma, dealt with a lot of stuff that went on at home.
Addiction issues as well.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Did you get along in the end?
We did. You know what? When I came into recovery, I kind of done a lot of work around myself and a lot of work around my dad, and came to understand and came to accept, you know, and forgive what had happened in the past. And we made up, and, you know, we told each other we loved each other, and I used to hug him, and we never hugged as a family. Myself and my sister were basically starved of two things that any child needs, which is love and affection, and we just didn't get it. My father never got it. My mother never got it. So they didn't know how to give it to us, you know.
So you managed to have that kind of reckoning that not many people do.
I did, you know, and my dad... My dad said the worst feeling in the world that you'll ever feel is loneliness. And when he passed away in the hospice in 2016 up in St. Luke's in Harold's Cross, he said to me, he said, Willie, I don't want to be on my own when I pass away. Now, he had great acceptance around that. He was in the departure lounge.
Right, yeah.
And I said, look, you won't.
He was religious. He believed.
Yeah, he had a really good faith, my dad. You know, he had a really good faith.
He wasn't on his own in the end?
He wasn't. You know what? The most intimate time I had with my father, Oliver, was when he was passing away. It was just myself and him. There was nobody else there. And it was great just to be able to be there and to be able to hold him and tell him that everything was all right, you know?
Wow.
And it was, it's one of them things I'll treasure forever, you know?
Your mother only died last year.
She was the last one to go, yeah. Her flight was a little bit later than my father's and my sister's. She was on standby for a little bit longer. She was delighted in the sense that she wanted to live longer than my father. She says, I want to beat your dad. And my dad was 78 when he passed, and my mother was 80. And she kind of went very sudden. She's the woman where I get my sense of humour from and get my resilience from. Really? She was an amazing woman. She lived in London. I ended up in a psychiatric hospital in London when I was 19. So... through my life and through my addiction, I ended up in three psychiatric hospitals, which you could probably call a psychiatric. And so I ended up in three psychiatric hospitals. It's an old joke, but
I've never laughed at a discussion about psychiatric hospitals before. But.
So the time I went, I ended up in the first one in London. My mother came over and she looked after me, and she's always been there.
Oh, my God. By the way, in all the times I've chatted to you, we've never discussed the fact that you work still in construction on top
I'm
threading the boards of the gating.
Yeah, yeah. Come here. I literally was like Superman earlier on. I've took me break to do this. So I was
really?
I was on a building site earlier. I went in, I changed my clothes, I put a bit of aftershave on, and I ran in here to...
What do you specifically do in the building site?
I work for an amazing scaffolding company called CSL Scaffolding.
Scaffolding.
And I do the audits and I do the safety checks on the scaffolds, and my boss is a gentleman.
Because it's a really noisy thing clanging that together. That's why
it
they,
is.
They
it
can
really,
tolerate.
I don't clang anymore.
It's a
good
job they can tolerate you. They can't hear you over the verse. Dead Man Talking, Will and White, is in the Gaiety on the 3rd of November.
3rd of November,
Month of the Dead. Very
it's a Monday night, believe it or not. But look, the show is over at 10 o'clock. We couldn't get a weekend day. But look, Monday doesn't have to be miserable anymore. It can be full of laughter. The show will be over at about 10 o'clock. You've time to get a bag of chips, get into bed and get yourself
Will
and
White's eulogies. Thanks so much.
From the North, text studio, followed by your message to 80889.